Welcome everybody to the edition of the Legends of Sports. This is your host, the OG Rob Silver. And today I have a guy that I've talked to for over a decade on Twitter. We've never talked over the phone. This is the first time. He's one of the first listeners of my boxing podcast, my World Championship Boxing podcast. And that's how we connected. And we've talked for over a decade about thing, politics, sports, women, you name it, we've talked about it. And it's my pleasure to introduce my co-host on today's topic, one of the greatest athletes of my lifetime, his lifetime, anybody's lifetime, the king, LeBron James. And to talk about LeBron is a man that's from his backyard. LeBron being from Akron, my brother here, Dre, is from Cincinnati. So Dre, what's up? When did you start first watching sports? And when did you first hear about LeBron?
What's good, people? I appreciate you, big Rob, having me on the show, man. It's an honor and a pleasure to speak with you, my brother. I respect your opinions. I respect your takes on things. It's very, very thoughtful, and you're a very positive person like myself, so that's why we vibe. But getting back to LeBron, man, I'm born and raised in the beautiful city of Cincinnati. I tell people all the time, Las Vegas is a sin city, but Cincinnati is the city of double sins, if you feel me.
Hey, I want to piggyback on what Dre just said. There is no man I've ever met that reps his city greater than Dre. Dre reps Cincinnati to the core. I remember when I was talking about the movie In Too Deep, and Dre goes, don't forget that film, that movie was filmed and based in Cincinnati.
Right.
So when you see Dre on Twitter, social media, he's always talking Buckeyes, Cavaliers, Bengals, and Cincinnati Red. He might be the only Cincinnati Red left, a fair Red left on the planet. So, hey, go ahead, continue, Dre.
No, you're good, bro. You can interject anytime you want to. But, I lived in Akron, man. I lived in Akron from 1979 until 1986.
What's the logistics? What's the difference? What's the mileage? How long does it take to get from Akron to Cincinnati and back?
It's about 3.5 hours.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, about 3.5 hours. So it's a nice little ride, man. But we moved there. My back in the day, my mom was married to my stepdad, man, and he basically raised me through all my formative years, man, teenage years and things. And we lived in Akron, so I know the Akron landscape very well. St. Vincent, St. Mary, where LeBron went to school, was basically private, you know, Catholic school and everything. So, yeah, they, you know, doing the typical Catholic school things that, as such as recruiting, you call it what you want.
Right.
But, I just being living in Akron, you know, like I said, living there for 7 years, man, I heard about this cat a long time before he really started popping, between his freshman and sophomore year of high school.
People were talking about LeBron when he was in middle school.
Yes.
Wow. Yes, because I didn't realize that.
He was a rough cat, man. You know, and back in those days, it's funny because, you know, when you were in the seventh or eighth grade and you could dunk, that was a big deal. Wow. So, you know, the legend of LeBron grew just based on the simple fact that, you know, the press started snooping around the Scoop Jacksons of the world and just kind of finding out, you know, trying to find out about this man, what his background is and what his situation was with his parents and all that. And so, and then the simple fact that obviously me being a huge sports fan, you know, it's just the sports world is a very small world, my friend, you know this. So people talk and then the legend grows and things of that nature. So I think the first time I saw LeBron was in person was his sophomore year in high school. They played for the state championship. They lost, but the man was incredible.
Is that the footage? Is that the game in that documentary? I forgot the name of the documentary, where he's crying and his coach consoles him?
Yes. Yes, because
that was a deep moment in that. I forgot the name. More Than a Game. More Than a Game was the name of the documentary. Yeah. By the way, that coach, and I noticed it was a black head coach, and he coached an all black team. What is that coach doing today? I forgot his name. Mention a couple of things about LeBron's high school coach, because he looked like he was a huge father figure in LeBron's life.
Well, similar to what, you know, a lot of the high school guys that come up and, you know, not just in Ohio, but across the country, a lot of the guys are interested in sports because they're coached by their fathers. You know this.
Right.
So it's just a situation where, you know, LeBron's father wasn't necessarily there and around in his inner circle. So everyone knew the potential that this young man had, and they knew that they wouldn't. He basically had a circle around him of people that he trusts, people to this day that they have all grown together and become business partners and things of that nature. So if you thought you was going to get close to LeBron, you had another thing coming, because he had a very insulated circle around him that kept him on the straight and narrow. So, you know, it's just one of those things where when you realize the potential, that could be anybody, a singer, a rapper, a ball player, they're going to make sure that, you know, this person is not going to be manipulated by the system and try to, you know, provide them with the things that's going to make them successful.
Do you remember the incident with him and Maurice Claret that got Claret in trouble? Course you remember. You're Ohio State fan. Talk a little bit about that, because clear up what really happened.
Okay, well, Akron and Youngstown is about 45 minutes away from each other. So, so those guys being basically superstars, high school superstars.
They were the biggest stars. They were the biggest youth stars of Ohio at that time. They were both considered to be the next big things.
That's right. So it's a small world, man. You know, it's just when you Drew Joyce is LeBron's high school coach, by the way. I'm sorry I didn't answer the question.
Okay. And Mr. Joyce, what's he doing today? Is he involved with LeBron's career? What does Mr. Joyce do today?
To this day, he's more into the entrepreneurial things that's going on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, LeBron is a very loyal individual, man.
I'm glad you said that. See, ladies and gentlemen, LeBron takes care of the man that was the father figure to an absentee father. I love that about LeBron, and LeBron is loyal. Look at the circle, a little off the topic. Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade have been his best friends since day one, and they're still there. I mean, LeBron is loyal. LeBron is loyal to the core. Go ahead, big man.
No, so, you know, it's just one of those kind of things where, LeBron is going to always, and we'll digress into this later, but LeBron is always going to give back, even, when it's a situation where some people don't deserve it. That's another story for another day, but LeBron is the bigger person. He's always going to be like that, just based on his childhood. It's like his calling card is just a kid from Akron, and that's what he still considers himself to be. So
by
he's going to always be that
by
good
the
person.
Way, he's been with the same woman since how old?
Ooh. I know it's been since high school, man. I would say probably.
How many athletes have done this? He's been with, and I'm thinking in my lifetime, and I'll be doing a podcast on this gentleman next month, one of my all-time favorites. LL Cool J and LeBron James have been with the same woman since they were teenagers. How many people could say that in the history? Miss Simone Johnson back in the day in Jamaica, Queens. How many athletes, black or white, how many entertainers, black or white, can say that? That's a testament to both. They're not young men anymore, but they're both men's loyalty. I mean, it's just brilliant, brilliant stuff. And both men from similar backgrounds. I want to get back to the Maurice Claret situation. What really happened? You being from the area, you know more than what people have led on to that we've been led to believe happened.
Well, basically, you know, there was a, you know, this not sugarcoating anything, but, you know, it was a young man who was doing his business, you know, getting his hustle game on, you know, selling drugs or what have you, whatever term you want to use. And basically was involved in a bad place at the wrong time. He was murdered. His life got taken from him on that day.
Right.
So, ironically, I went to the national championship game in Tempe, Arizona, and me and my best friend from college, we were out there, and that was a huge topic about how the NCAA was saying that, you know, they couldn't pay for him to go back home to go to his one of his best friend's funerals, you know, to pay his respects. And you know, they were saying that he could go home, Maurice Collette could go home to go to the funeral, but he had to pay his own way. Well, I mean,
which was goddamn ridiculous, because in Maurice Collette's freshman year, he was the biggest star in the NCAA.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean,
and how much money did Maurice Collette make Ohio State in his freshman year? And he can't get a plane ticket home? Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? No, I mean, you can't. It's the same situation with Chris Webber in Michigan. How much money did he make Michigan? All right.
Right.
There's no number. There's no number. Yeah.
I mean, you picked the black athlete, Patrick Ewing, Danny Manning. I mean, we can go on down the list. But I mean, Patrick Ewing paid for 4 years at Georgetown. I mean, who does that nowadays? How much money and prestige and what people don't realize.
That's because of Patrick Ewing's Jamaican background and the fact that he loved John Thompson like a second father. He played those 4 years. If it was any other coach, it was Bobby Knight, Dean Smith, he would have left after his freshman year, because Patrick Ewing, after his freshman year, would have been the first pick in the NBA draft. That's how great he was, right?
Oh, yeah. So
only because of John Thompson did Patrick Ewing stay all 4 years at Georgetown, and it cost him financially. He would have made a lot more money, but another man that's very loyal, because Patrick Ewing also has the same circle of friends that he had back then, Michael Jordan being one of them. So, Lorette made so much money for Ohio State, wanted to go back for his friend's funeral. They refused to give him the money. Continue.
So, you know, LeBron, you know, being, you know, him and Maurice Claret were obviously tight. that was a situation. That was right before the NBA draft.
Right.
That was in January.
Yeah.
Right. That was January of 2003 when Ohio State was about to play Miami for the national championship. The Willis McGahee, the Kellen Winslow rapist ass was on that team.
It was the last great Miami team.
That's right. And this is coming from a Buckeye fan, you know, not a big fan of the Hurricanes, man. But
it was a passing of the guard, because then Ohio State went on their run. Miami's running. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it was a situation where LeBron was in his last year of high school. That was LeBron's last year of high school. So he was restricted from doing anything because he was still considered to be a high school athlete. And if you remember, for those who don't know, I'll tell you a little story. LeBron was gifted a Hummer in high school. Okay.
Man, the racist middle-aged media made it sound like LeBron had stolen a Brinks truck.
Right.
Oh, how could this inner city kid, his mother's not making any money. She was on welfare at one time. How's he driving this Hummer? Who's giving him money under the man? Shut up.
Right. That was that bullshit right there. So I'll tell you another little side note on that. So they tried to suspend LeBron for I can't remember the amount of games, but the Ohio High School Athletic Association said, wait a minute, hold on for a second. Do you know how much money
they're not gonna suspend the guy whose presence is having these games televised on ESPN? Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? No.
That's right. So, you know.
And to this day, ladies and gentlemen, LeBron James still the only high school player ever to have his games aired on national television. No one's done it since. No one did it before.
Right. So it's been a few games here and there when Michael Jordan's kids were in high school. They played a couple games, but basically it was because of their opponents and the media used the connection that they were Michael Jordan's kids when they played against Eric Gordon.
What about Bronny?
Bronny's games have been on television, but right. The hoopla is not the same.
It's not the same. Well, you know, I would think it would be more, but yeah, I get you. All right, so back, continue. Go ahead.
So LeBron tried to help his friend out. They said he couldn't do that. There was so much pomp and circumstance surrounding LeBron about how they can exploit him, but he can never use his, what's become popular now is roll out everyone's tongue, is that name, image, and likeness. How he couldn't profit off his name, image, and likeness to actually do something helpful. I mean, he wasn't like he wanted the money to, you know, go buy his boy some nice whips and anything like that. He just wanted to help his friend out, you know, by, you know, helping out in his grief and time. And he had the resources to do that. And he wasn't able to do that from the High School Athletic Association and the NCAA. So one of the first things that LeBron did, and I loved when he signed that contract with Nike at the time, it was the richest contract in the history of the sport. Mm-hmm. He signed like a 10-year, $95 million deal with Nike.
$95 million, right.
To, you know, to endorse their products and things. So, you know, LeBron, when he first signed his endorsement deal, he said at that time, I'm going to give back. I'm not going to be one of those kind of people that's going to turn my back on my hood or turn my back on underprivileged people or turn my back against my people, meaning black people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to provide for them. I'm going to be there for them and give them opportunities that they probably would never have if someone like me wasn't looking out for them.
Exactly. And he continues to this day to do that. Matter of fact, more so now than back then because of his resources. He has unlimited resources.
Right. So, you know, it's one of those kind of situations where, man, I think that, you know, and we're talking about 2002, 2003. So obviously things are a little bit better now with the name, image, and likeness, with the colleges paying the kids and getting endorsement deals. But back then was basically a Gestapo. I mean, you know, basically you told you do what we tell you to do when we tell you to do it. So you didn't have any, you know, ability to do anything about that to quote unquote break the system. This is before, I know for the young people, they don't understand this. This is before social media. This was before the YouTubers becoming millionaires. This was still, the internet
it was less than a decade. The internet didn't really start becoming popular till 95, 96. So we're really still at the formative years of the internet. And so basically you were a slave to what the media was telling you.
That's correct. Hey, Rob, you and me about the same age. I remember dial-ups, man, the loud dial-ups.
Let me tell you something. I had dial-up till the late 2000s. I think I had dial-up till 2010. And then finally I got Wi-Fi and high speed. But up until, Dre knows I'm a boxing historian. And those who have listened to this program know I'm a boxing historian. I used to download fights I didn't have in my collection. And if it was a 15-round fight, like the Bobby Chacon, Bazooka Limon fight of the year from 82, took me a whole weekend for that shit to download. Back in 2008.
You speak in my language when you start talking about them old fights, man. You know I'm right there with you with them boxing, man.
Yeah. So I know. So for the listeners out there, you know, you didn't have social media didn't become a thing till 2004 when I believe both Facebook and Twitter began 2004. Facebook and MySpace started in 2004. So we're still not even in we don't even have a social media site yet at this point in time. So go ahead, continue.
So, you know, this was a big deal, man. This was a national story on a high school kid from Akron, Ohio. I mean, basically, before LeBron James, don't kid yourself, you couldn't find Akron on the map. LeBron James made Akron a destination. He made media from LA, from New York, from Florida, from Atlanta, from Chicago, from all over the place come and celebrate what they were seeing. They know that they were seeing history when it, and this man was making it, just a kid from Akron. So, you know, it's just one of those kind of things where the for me to sit in here and tell you retrospectively how immense and popular that this man was as a high school kid doesn't even do it justice.
Let me tell you something. It was the same thing Magic Johnson did with East Lansing. No one ever heard of East Lansing until Magic Johnson showed up at Michigan State jumping, doing his thing. It, I mean, these two guys, and I've always said they've had similar games. You look at when LeBron came to the league, I was telling my boys, why are people comparing him to Michael Jordan? He reminds me of Magic Johnson. So, yeah, there you begin with the similarities where they both put their hometowns on the map.
Right. You know, that's my idol. That's my childhood idol, man, Magic Johnson. I'm telling you. And then
talk about bookending from Magic to LeBron. And I know you've been a Laker fan for many years. And so finally you get both idols on one show.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
If you live long enough, your dreams will come true. Go ahead, continue.
No, you're good. You're good. And you know the thing about it is, man, me and Magic, when I met the man, I said, I got something to show you. He said, what's that? I pulled out my driver's license, showed him my birthday. I said, what's up, Leo? He said, hey, what's happening, Leo? You know what I'm saying? Like, we've been knowing each other for years, man.
For those who haven't listened, please listen to the Magic Johnson episode on Legends of Sports. My co-host Ian, he talked about how his cousin was obsessed with Magic and drove up to his I know you laughed at that story. Drove up to his apartment and tried to get inside, but Magic ignored her. You can't do that today. They threw you down to they cuffed you. But that was a great story. So you got to meet the man. That's a beautiful thing, man.
And for my two cents, while I still am fresh in my mind, you brought it up a little bit earlier. I was going to tell you this, but you brought it up. You beat me to it. That's how you know great minds think alike. You got to do one on the legend, John Thompson.
Oh, that man. 100%. That's in the works. Don't worry about that. I mean, I did Patrick and I did Iverson, so I got to do Thompson. He was the driving force behind their greatness. Patrick Ewing and Allen Iverson do not accomplish what they accomplished if another coach coached them.
That's right.
And I will die on that hill, right?
I mean, guys, like, you know, he was basically going down to the – you were in New Orleans. You might have been down there during these times when John Thompson was going down to New Orleans getting guys who were gold glove boxers and taking them up to Georgetown.
I attended the largest attendance in NCAA history game. 1989, I believe it was February, March of 80, might have been January of 89, Georgetown versus LSU. And you know who the star at LSU was at that time.
Yes, indeed.
Mr.
Stanley Mahmoud. Robinson, Mr. Yes. Shaquille.
No, this was before Shaq. Shaq was still in high school. Shaq didn't come to this was Chris
was
Jackson.
Chris Jackson?
Yeah, okay. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. He was the one who, they came to see him. They didn't come to see morning because the game was in New Orleans and Chris Jackson was the freshman star at LSU. All right, so let's continue on with LeBron, finish up this story before we get to his NBA career.
So, you know, back in those days when LeBron first came out, and oh man, the hate was real, man. You know, you gotta, you know, people like us, you know, we black men and everything like that. We aspire to see inspirational stories. We aspire to see the kids from the hood, the kids whose dads weren't around, the kids who basically had one way out, not maybe to use their talents as a rapper or ball player. You know, you very rarely heard about someone making it academically. It was always something, an extraordinary talent, you know, physically, or, you know, the gift of gab or whatever, the comedians of the world, the athletes, you know. So for someone like that to make it out the hood, it was cheered and celebrated, you know, amongst the black folks, you know, that basically knew what the young man went through, to make it to where he was. So, you know, there was a lot of backlash when LeBron, you know, at the draft, and how basically he turned out all of these offers from these agents. And a lot of people, you know, were turned off by that because they was like, you know, how's this young man going to make it without representation?
Dre, it's the old guard, the media, looking out for the old guard, these old, crusty, white, and Jewish agents who don't let anybody inside the door. That's what that was about. How dare he? No. LeBron did what his coach probably advised him to do. Hey, be your own man. Don't let these guys take your money. You could negotiate your own deals. All right? You're smart enough. LeBron at 18 was a brilliant young man. All right? Dre can attest to that, and Dre will talk more about that. How ironic was it that Cleveland, the only Ohio team, got the first pick to draft LeBron?
Man, there was a lot of cold lottery ball situation with Patrick Ewing when supposedly the ball was frozen.
Because you could, if you were, now, you know, some people have claimed that the NFL and the NBA and MLB are worked professional wrestling to an extent. I won't argue if you think that's the case. You know, there's where there's smoke, there's fire. The biggest star to come out of high school since Magic Johnson. Be honest with you, because when Jordan went to North Carolina, no one knew who the fuck he was when he came out of high school.
That's right.
It was Magic, Chris Webber, and Felipe Lopez to a lesser extent. And then it was LeBron. And LeBron was bigger than them two guys combined coming out of high school. He was the biggest high school star to come out of high school since Magic Johnson.
And this is a kid from Akron. Can you imagine if LeBron was from New York City like Felipe Lopez was? Oh my God.
The pressure would have been, Felipe couldn't handle that pressure. And he stayed in New York to play college basketball.
Right? St. John's, yeah.
Yeah. So LeBron, Cleveland gets the first pick. So we know they're drafting LeBron. LeBron gets drafted. Talk about his rookie year and his problems with Paul Silas.
Okay, first and foremost, Paul Silas was an old school coach.
Yes.
LeBron was young and brass. He had a quota, as Phil Jackson would say, he had a posse that Paul Silas
I hated that term. And I know Phil Jackson's a lifelong liberal, but like a lot of liberals, they talk shit out their mouth when they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Right. I mean, come on, man. Phil Jackson was a hippie, man. Him and Bill Walton was smoking weed back in the 60s and shit, so... Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, man. You know they can't relate to these young cats nowadays.
Oh, this is something that Bill Walton would have said. And I remember Bill Walton getting ripped and deservedly so by Larry Johnson because some of the bullshit he said about Larry Johnson during the 1999 finals against the Spurs. So he continued to talk about Paul Silas and his issues with LeBron.
So Paul Silas was an old school coach, man. I mean, you know, as you know, lifelong sports fan, playing and watching sports, you have watched generations of coaches change from the, you know, Woody Hayes, you know, RIP, you know, to the hands-on coaches, to the coaches that, you know, would grab you by your face mask, grab you by your jersey, snatch you, embarrass you, cuss you out, all that stuff.
Bobby Knight and Woody Hayes are the best two examples.
Right. So Paul Silas he wasn't quite that extreme. Well, he wasn't a physical, but Paul Silas was a big man. Paul Silas was about 6'9", about 270.
Paul Silas' reputation as a tough guy in the history of the NBA is only equaled by two other guys I've seen in my lifetime. Maurice Lucas.
Yes.
And Charles Oakley.
There you go. And ironically, Charles Oakley's from Cleveland too.
An Ohio legend. Yeah. In more ways than one.
Oak tree don't play.
Hey, look, there's a reason why whenever Michael Jordan used to go out in the offseason, even after Oakley was traded to the Knicks from Chicago, he always had Oakley with him because ain't no one's going to fuck with Mike trying to rob him if he's with the Oak man.
That's 100 right there. I mean, you know, it's one of the kind of situations, man, where Oak was about that life no matter where it was. You know, I don't know if you remember back in the day when T.I. and Floyd got into it over Tiny. It was a little beef going there.
T.I. said,
man, you know, you must don't know I've been to prison. He said, man, you must don't know what I do for a living. And then T.I. said, well, I do it in the streets. And Floyd said, well, I do it wherever, motherfucker. So shit, what you talking about? So it's one of the kind of situations where, you know, Oak was about that life for real. He didn't care if he was on the basketball court, in the streets, whatever you want to say, he was going to be himself.
And he's still like that to this day. And Jordan loves Oakley to the point where he even gave Oakley a coaching job when no one else would even look his fucking way. So,
right, that's right. So just to bring it back to Paul Silas. So Paul Silas was kind of that old school rough dude. And he realized that one of the biggest problems with LeBron and Paul Silas, obviously LeBron never really had a problem being coached. LeBron just wants someone who's competent, someone
right.
who
right. Right.
he can believe in, you know, to move his game up. I don't think the actual coaching aspect of it was the thing. It was the philosophical differences between the old school mentality that Silas had and LeBron, you know, wanting to feel comfortable. If you're a walking multi-million dollar corporation, everything that you do is basically you got eyes on you. You got to have people around you, man. You got to have people around you that you trust. You got right. to have people around you to take care of the small stuff that you don't have the time to do because you got obligations. Paul Silas didn't like that. So even though Paul Silas knew that he had a superstar bright as, you know, as you stated, the likes that we hadn't seen since Magic Johnson, there were a lot of things that Paul Silas tried to control outside of the quote-unquote basketball court that LeBron and him did not agree on. So you kind of saw that being a short marriage from the beginning, but the fact that Paul Silas was a black man, and LeBron's a historian of the game as well, so he knew who Paul Silas was. He had did his homework. He knew what kind of player he was. He knew what kind of nurturing man Paul Silas was. So, you know, they thought that it was going to work, but in retrospect, it wasn't the best combination.
All right, so his rookie year, they just missed making the playoffs. He gets rookie of the year. I'm going to be honest with you, Dre. Carmelo Anthony deserved that rookie of the year, not LeBron.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm a Melo fan. So mm-hmm. I like them both. Coming out.
Only reason I'm saying that is because Carmelo took the Nuggets to the playoffs, and I thought that should have been the deciding factor. Carmelo had an incredible rookie year, and Detroit dropped the ball not drafting him. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, they tricked that Darko Miller shits. That little
Miller shit. But neither here or there. Let's go on to the Olympic debacle. And once again, an old school coach, Larry Brown, does not play LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Carmelo Anthony. They ride the bench.
Wait a minute.
Wow, the United States loses three games and only gets a bronze.
You forget one. Don't forget Amari Stoudemire. He wouldn't play him either.
Yeah, but you know what? He could have sat his ass down. You had LeBron, Carmelo, and Wade that were instant offense. Somebody's got to throw Amari the ball, and he can't make his own shot. Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron can. And what were they lacking? It was offense. Remember, Tim Duncan was getting foul trouble every game, right away.
And then don't even get me started on Richard Jefferson getting beat back door every damn play because he wouldn't even pay attention. But I digress.
Richard Jefferson shouldn't have been on that team anyway. I think the only reason he was on that team was because KG and my man, what's his name? He went into Hall of Fame recently, and T-Mac. Refused to decided not to go to the Olympics. Yeah. It's the only reason Jefferson was on the team. He had no. He's not a fucking dream team, dude. No. And you had three incredible young players ride the bench, and they get the bronze medal because Larry Brown didn't coach them. I mean, come on, Larry.
There are so many sub stories that's associated with that.
Bet you if Detroit would have drafted Carmelo, you would have played Carmelo.
Right. First and foremost, the same things that make you laugh can make you cry, man. Larry Brown had just came off a title with the Pistons.
Yeah, just won a championship, right?
It just won a title, so Larry Brown thought his shit didn't stink. I mean, let's keep it 100 on that. So,
and the same thing happened when he went to the Knicks. He thought his shit didn't. Yeah, right.
So it was, you know, the catchphrase back then was "play the right way, play the right way." So Larry Brown had, you know, the Pistons were a different team. The Pistons were a grind them out team. The Rip Hamilton, the Ben Wallace.
Let me tell you something. The 2004 NBA championship Detroit Pistons, in my 45 years of watching the NBA, greatest defensive team I've ever seen. Everybody played defense. It was an unselfish team led by the type of point guard that Larry Brown always wanted to coach. Larry Brown saw himself in Chauncey Billups, and Chauncey was able to shine, but Joe Dumars failed to realize how great of a player Carmelo Anthony would have been had they drafted him instead of Darko Milicic. And when Carmelo later played with Chauncey in Denver, a past his prime Chauncey made Carmelo better. So imagine an in prime Chauncey. I don't want to anger Detroit Pistons fans because I'm a Sixer fan. That's their Sean Bradley. That's their Sean Bradley pick right there was Darko Milicic. All right, back. So continue with the Olympic story.
So there are so many subplots that go along with that story, but the main subplot was that LeBron was hanging out with Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson had the boys hanging out, had them breaking curfew. We know Allen at this point, 2003, Allen Iverson was a superstar.
They were in this was Athens, Greece, right? AI was out there getting Greek pussy, all right? And he was, getting LeBron and Carmelo some. What the fuck?
Hey, with that pretty ass skin, eating all them oils and eating all that good food, that Mediterranean diet, man, he couldn't pass that shit.
So good, continue.
Just hanging out with them and Larry Brown, basically, you know, since they were hanging out with AI, basically didn't play those guys, man. And everybody's like, you know, these are young men, they're having fun, man. You making an example on guys who play in an Olympic team, are you fucking serious right now? I mean, what kind of a joke is this? We going for the gold medal, and you want to, since you they didn't quote-unquote play the right way and obey the rules, you're going to sit three of the brightest players on the team down?
And you know what's funny, Dre? Every time they made up their sporadic appearances, they dominated, and then right back on the bench.
Right. That's some old slave master type shit. I mean, I just keep it 100, but that's the way I felt about it.
All right, so they failed to go. They win a bronze, and LeBron goes back to Cleveland. And his second season, this is the comparison I make between LeBron James and another legendary athlete. Look at how LeBron James looked in 2003, 2004, his rookie year, and look how he looked in his second year, 2004, 2005. Reminds me of when Muhammad Ali, when he was Cassius Clay, beat Sonny Liston in 1964, and then when he fought him in a rematch a year later in 1965. In 64, he looked like a boy beating a man. In 65, he was a man beating an old man, all right? In 1 year span, he looked like he aged 5 years. The body, not the face, physically. Like, he grew into becoming a beast. And that's what I saw from LeBron. LeBron in his rookie year looked like a baby. His second year in the league, he looked like the greatest basketball player that ever lived. Physically. Right. And he is the greatest physical specimen in the history of the NBA. You the way he has maintained that incredible physique. That's what he came in to talk about, that his second year and what he accomplished his second year in the league.
Well, one thing that you have to remember is the fact that LeBron was playing on short physical talent and ability his first year in the league as a rookie. You know, LeBron was a young kid. He had to balance, you know, being a multimillionaire, travel, you know, all the kind of things that you didn't have to deal with as a high school player. So after that first year, I think, and to your point where you say that Carmelo should have won a rookie of the year, Carmelo said he had never been that tired in his life after his rookie year. So
and remember, Carmelo went from regular season, playoffs, Olympics, Olympic trials, Olympic exhibition games. So, yeah, and even though Carmelo was 19, 20 years old, he only played 1 year of college.
Right.
He probably he never played that many games in basketball. And LeBron comes in the second year, and what you see is what you get. What you see, his second year, he averaged 27 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists. Do you know that is his career numbers? That's his average for a career. So his second year, he has the same average that he has today for his entire career. Meaning, in his second year, Dre, he starts that level of consistency that to this day, he's continued. He hasn't dropped at all.
And you know, the thing about it was, when the Cavs let Paul Silas go, I think the skies kind of opened up because Paul Silas had wanted to run LeBron to run a quote unquote system. But when Brendan Malone came on in his second year, 2004-2005, Brendan kind of said, okay, LeBron, just play your game. And that is when LeBron really took off to another stratosphere.
LeBron's rookie year, he wasn't handling the ball. Beginning the second year until to this day, he's been the primary ball handler for all the teams he's played for. That didn't happen his rookie year. And which is crazy how he's playing off the ball his rookie year, and he scores the least amount of points he's ever scored, probably in his entire life, high school included, right? Then he gets back to being the primary ball handler, and his average goes up to the point where it stayed the same since his second year, and more assists, more rebounds, better defender, the whole nine. I think his second year, he was one of the leaders of steals, and people saw that this man was an all-around talent. He wasn't just a great offensive guy. He's a great defensive player as well. And to this day, even now, I mean, at 36, 37 years old, when he wants to, he's an incredible defender.
And you know, the whole thing about LeBron, man, I mean, and I know you come from a perspective of you recognize greatness when you see it.
Yep.
But I tell people all the time, when they tell me that I don't like LeBron, I said, man, it's only two reasons why you don't like LeBron. I already know it's one of the two.
One is he's a rich black dude. That's one. Put that right there. And what's the other?
And the other one is that you were a Jordan fan. So if you were a Jordan fan, man, you ain't going to never hear LeBron his problems. Ever.
Look, I'm a fan of both. Those are the two greatest players I've ever seen in my lifetime. Period. I tell people that all the time. But for you to be a Jordan fan and not recognize the greatness that LeBron has brought to the game, that the LeBron James is, you're not a real basketball fan. Don't give me that bullshit. You a Michael Jordan fan who wishes he never retired. Man, get the fuck out of here, all right?
Yeah.
Them two dudes are on the same level. I will never argue with anybody who says Jordan is number one as long as they say LeBron is number two. And I won't argue with anybody that says LeBron is number one as long as Jordan number two. To me, they're on the same level up there in the atmosphere, and everybody else is trying to get to their planet. I don't want to hear, oh, well, Jordan is Jordan. You're not a basketball fan. You're a Michael Jordan jockstrapper, right?
There you go. Talk to him. Let the people know. So, you know, it's just one of those kind of situations where, if you've been watching sports long enough, you'll see a guy that reminds you of somebody. There's nobody like LeBron reminds you of because he is his own brand. There is nobody walking this planet that plays like LeBron, that has the IQ like LeBron has. I'm just talking on the court. I'm not even talking about the business acumen. I'm just talking about on the court. I'm just talking about how guys, when they play with LeBron for the first time, you know, they'll say, what's it like playing with LeBron? You know, you played against him all this year. They said, man, he knows every other team's plays. He's like, okay, yeah, he's going to run. Watch the pick. He's going to pop out. And they're just amazed by that.
Before his anti-vaccine stance, Kyrie's been trying to get back with LeBron forever.
Right.
All right, so he has a great second year, and talk about that season and eventually what happened at the end.
Well, first and foremost, getting back to what I was saying about Carmelo, two reasons why LeBron had a great second year. One, Carmelo said he had never been that tired before in his whole career, so LeBron was like, you know what, I got to get strong. I got to get my body right. I think LeBron's rookie year, he was still playing through a little baby face, still was eating, you know, doing what kids do, eating stuff he wasn't supposed to do. And then I think he realized, you know, if I want to have a long career, I got to get stronger. I got to start eating right. And that's why his body was totally different his second year. That and the fact that Brendan Malone let him play his game.
Right.
You know, those two things took LeBron to another stratosphere. So at that point, it's just like anything else. It's just like when you have a child, it's a newborn, you know, you that first year, you're trying to be a parent, you're struggling. And next year, you know, okay, it gets a little bit easier. You know, you kind of got a routine going. It's the same thing when you're in the infant stages of your NBA career. So it's just one of those kind of things where LeBron was always seen as the next can't-miss superstar. But still, even when you got that kind of talent, that kind of ability, it still takes time to nurture. There are so many things that go along with just playing basketball that the average fan just don't even think about or know about.
All right, so we go to the third season, and his numbers explode even more in the third season. Once again, he's around seven points, seven assists a game, but now he's averaging over 30 points a game, and now you know Cleveland's his team. Everything is, well, it was supposed to be built around him the day he was the first pick. But, you know, Silas coming from that old school philosophy and trying to have LeBron fit into his system instead of trying to fit into LeBron's way of playing. Now everything is flowing with Cleveland, but you're going to have the same problem throughout his entire first run at Cleveland and, to a lesser extent, his second run in Cleveland. He doesn't have the complementary ball players. It's LeBron James and a bunch of role players. I wish my father was alive. He died in 2000. See LeBron, because my father would have said the same thing that's happened to LeBron happened with Patrick Ewing with the Knicks. You never had that second star. You never had a second star with LeBron in Cleveland. Even when you had broken down Shaq coming there, he was broken down. Shaq shouldn't have been playing.
Let me tell you something, man. I tell people this all the time. Mm-hmm. How many guys, not Kevin Durant, not Steph Curry, could take a team with Larry Hughes, Drew Gooden, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Sasha Pavlik to the finals? That team was straight trash.
Matter of fact, let's get to the 2006-2000 playoffs, and let's get to probably, in my opinion, the single greatest performance by any player in the history of the NBA playoffs. That epic game in which he beat the great Piston defense by himself.
Yes.
Talk about that game, and talk about your reaction when you saw LeBron make shot after shot after shot, carrying his team on his back.
Let me tell you something, man. I had just bought a high-definition television back then. That sucker was about 2 months old. So I'm watching it on this high-def television, man. I'm just looking at myself. Man, this is amazing. The picture quality is amazing. And second of all, the way he doing these boys ugly is like nothing I ever seen before, man. The man scored 28 consecutive points on the Pistons in the fourth quarter. Basically, hit any shot you want to name. Tip dunks, jumpers, threes, and ones. Hit all his free throws. The man scored 28 consecutive points. It was one of the most incredible things that you ever will witness. And still, probably, besides when LeBron won his first championship with the Heat, is probably the most memorable thing in LeBron's career.
You preach it to the choir, because that's exactly how I felt. I sat there and I'm like, man, I put this on the level of Magic Johnson's Game 6 performance his rookie year against the Sixers without Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, scoring 42 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. Before my time, I was a baby, so I didn't see this game. Walt Frazier's Game 7 against the Lakers, 36 points, 18 assists. Michael Jordan's flu game, in which he beat Utah and almost collapsed and died after the game was over. That was the type of game that LeBron had, and you can make an argument that that was greater than all those other games.
Yeah, it was pretty damn close, man, because you have to understand, let's put some perspective on the people. The Detroit Pistons, as you said, Juan, were the most feared defensive team in the league, and LeBron toyed with them. He did whatever he wanted to against that team. And me and you have talked about this on Twitter before. We were talking about defensive players. I said, don't forget about Tayshaun Prince. Tayshaun Prince was a hell of a defensive player.
That entire Tayshaun was the best defensive. Well, Ben Wallace was on the same level. Everybody was a great defensive player on that team, but Prince with those long arms. Prince with those long arms used to shut people down. I mean, he shut Kobe down in the 2000. You know, you're a Laker fan. He shut Kobe down in the 2004 finals. Right?
Oh, Lord.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe dribbled the ball so much, man. I'm surprised it had air in it after the damn game, man. Don't get me started on that.
He couldn't get past those long arms. Prince was special on defense. And LeBron just torched him. And Detroit never recovered from that game. And they never recovered as a team, period, because that was the end of their run.
Right. They went to the finals back-to-back years. They were trying to win it back-to-back titles, but Tim Duncan got them in Game 7 in 2005. And so this was the—
2007.
It was 2007. Yeah. So that was still to this day. You know, when somebody passes away and they'll say— one sentence to describe this person's life, that will be in that one sentence. That now, game was it, against the Pistons.
Was it 28 straight points or 27 out of 28 points?
I thought it was 28 straight points. Let me look it up real quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there's any mistakes made on this podcast, as I've said on previous shows, most of this is done off the cuff, right? This is done mostly off the memories of my co-host and myself. Whoever's coaching, we're doing this off the top of our head. And correct me if I'm wrong. I remember in 27 out of 28. If it's either one, is an amazing feat, right? Because basically, he's doing it by himself.
So yeah, he had 48 points that night. I mean, the man was on a mission to get to the finals and get swept by the Spurs. Yeah,
they weren't beaten. Only way they would have beaten the Spurs is if someone had kidnapped Duncan, right? they weren't beaten. This was Duncan in his prime. They and Ginobili and Tony Parker. They had and Coach Pop. They had a tremendous team. They weren't losing to the Cavaliers. But that's okay.
I got a hit right here, Rob. 25 straight points. I said 28. I gave him three more points.
Wasn't it like 27 out of 28? Like he scored.
Yeah.
Right? It was 27. Okay, so all right.
Yeah.
But 25 consecutive. Straight, still, yes. That's unheard of. That's unheard of, right? Unreal. And he's not even at his full, he's not even in his prime yet. He's still working his way towards there. All right.
And one thing you gotta think about too, just like you brought up a great point. LeBron never really had a running mate. That's why when he went to Miami, he finally had running mates, guys he thought was on his level that he could succeed. But back then, I mean, he was playing with guys. I mean, Keisha Cole's ex, Boobie Gibson, was the starting point.
Oh, you're talking about Daniel Booby Gibson Cole, who lived off her ass. Look at this idiot. Look at this idiot. Keisha Cole is a beautiful woman.
Ooh,
beautiful woman. I would lick every ounce of her body, all right?
Whoa.
This clown gets her, marries her, gets her pregnant, right? They have a baby together. They're married. Gets cut from the NBA. Gets cut by the Cavaliers. Gets hurt. Can't get another job. Decides he wants to be a rapper, right? Get the fuck out of here. And then cheats on her in their own home. Well, her home. He ain't buy that. She wants that. And so she dumps him, rightfully so. I congratulate you, Keisha, for dumping that bum. And we haven't heard about this clown since. What a clown.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely wasn't the brightest star in the sky. And
and he, whatever money he made in the NBA was because LeBron was his teammate. Because
of course
he was a second rate NBA ball player who had a nice jump shot. And, you know, he'd get, you know, threes off of double teams on LeBron. The only guy that was close was Williams that you could say was a running man. And even he at best is a backup shooting guard off the bench. I never saw him as an all-star two guard.
Talking about Mo Williams. So it was just a situation, man. And I tell people this all the time because, you know, obviously me being a big LeBron fan, I tell people this all the time. There is no way that Steph or KD, any of those guys, could take those teams that LeBron had to the finals. I mean, those teams were strong. Those Cavs team, I know we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but those Cavs teams that he had before he came to the Lakers that went to the finals were straight trash. Those teams were garbage.
You're right. You ain't lying. Oh, man. Oh, man. And then the following year, the 2007-2008 year, the only MVP ever won by Kobe, which I still to this day baffles my mind. And I wasn't a big Kobe fan, but that man deserved more than one goddamn MVP. But you know who you can blame that on? Right. The writers who were in love with the
same people that voted for Steve Nash.
Steve Nash, 2 years in a row. Come on. He didn't deserve either award. Get the fuck out of here.
The same people that voted for the Joker last year, but I digress.
Well, you know, they gotta have their one bright shining hope. By the way, Larry Bird deserved all three MVPs he got. You could have made an argument for Magic, but it was either Magic or Bird. Then Magic got his after Bird's run was over. So I can't complain about Bird getting his three in a row, but Nash getting two in a row was fucking criminal. It was goddamn criminal. So 2007. Let me
digress real quick on Larry Bird. This is how you know Larry Bird was one bad motherfucker. He walked into the All-Star game locker room before the three-point shooting contest, didn't even take his warm-up off and said, which one of you guys going to finish in second?
And he won.
Now, if you a white boy and you go into a locker room full of brothers and tell them which one going to end up in second, which one of y'all going to finish second to me, you know you one of the greatest that ever put some shoes on, bro.
Well, as I mentioned on the Larry Bird podcast, that's available on the same feed that we did my co-host Michael and I did a few weeks ago. Larry learned his game from playing against brothers. You can't get that good playing against other dudes from French Lick, right? So Larry Bird learned by playing against other brothers, and you've seen his game. And Larry Bird is one of the few legendary white athletes that didn't use it, that didn't how you say it, Dre? That didn't use their white privilege to his advantage.
You've
seen it. The most recent example is Aaron Rodgers. You've seen Brett Favre. You see it. Tom Brady's a bad motherfucker, so he really didn't need it. But Brady looks like if he had to, he'd use it. But he hasn't had to yet. But Bird, he never did that. He was quiet. He just played the game. He didn't go on rant. He was a coach's player. Whatever Casey Jones, when he took over, when Casey Jones took over the team, he listened to KC. Knew the game had to go through Bird, but Bird never questioned KC. You like me, you worked all your life. How many times you've supervised a white dude and they're not listening to you because in their head, because they're white, they're right, right?
Right.
Bird never did that. So I give Bird the utmost credit. He never used that white privilege to his advantage. What you saw is what you got, and he gave it 100%.
And not to take it down the rabbit hole too far, but that white privilege you're talking about, perfect example, when Kevin McHale was with Minnesota, and he basically gave Kevin Garnett to Boston so they could win a championship. He did Danny Ainge a solid.
Yeah, because that's his old teammate, and that's right. That circle that they ran in the same circle. Because they gifted him that shit. They get and Minnesota's just now recovering from that trade. They were bad for years. Now they have a good team. What? 13 years later, 14 years later. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. All right, 2008. They lose to the Celtics, but the Celtics that year, they had the big three, Garnett, Allen, and, of course, Ray Allen. Garnett, Allen, and Paul Pierce. My bad. Paul Pierce. Ray Allen, and Garnett. But LeBron puts on an incredible performance in the elimination game. Even though they lose, LeBron does his best to try and carry him to victory. Doesn't have enough. Talk about that game and... if you had any frustration of watching Cleveland and this guy who's developed, and now you can make an argument. This is the year, even though Kobe won the MVP, and I'm going to piss Kobe Bryant fans out there. I believe 2007, 2008, that game when LeBron did his best to try and beat Boston by himself, that he surpassed Kobe as the best player in the NBA.
Right. So... first and foremost, I mean, this is be honest. The Celtics knew that they couldn't handle LeBron unless they built a super team. That's what I try to tell people all the time. They keep saying, "Oh, LeBron."
Well, remember, they couldn't beat Detroit either. Detroit was always in their way, and now LeBron's in their way.
Right, right. So you know, I get into discussions with cats all the time. How they always talk about, LeBron can't, you know, he always, when he goes somewhere, he always got these super teams. I said, hold up a second, man. Let me tell you something, man. I said the Celtics were the first team that they started this trend. When they got Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce, they started the trend because, first and foremost, Paul Pierce can talk all the shit he wants to about LeBron. He can't hold LeBron's jock, can't even hold it to sniff it. And this man, that's why the ESPN fired his ass, because he said had so many derogatory comments about LeBron. Quietly, somebody tried to talk to Paul Pierce and tell him about, you know, tone his comments about LeBron James down. He never did that. So eventually they got sick of his ass and cut ties with that fool.
Well, they found the perfect excuse when he did that Instagram with the prostitutes, the strippers.
and I'm gonna keep it 100 with you. I'm telling you right now, them young ladies didn't look like shit compared to all the money that he got, man. That's all you got, bro. That's his side.
But I think because he's married, right? He's married, so he had to make it look like he wasn't getting involved in anything.
Oh, okay.
But we know the real deal. We know the real deal. But to credit Paul Pierce had a phenomenal 2008 playoff.
Oh, he was outstanding.
He was outstanding against Cleveland, and he was even greater against the Lakers. He outplayed Kobe.
Yeah, after he pulled his Willis Reed stunt with the old going off the court in the wheelchair shit. Don't get me started on that.
You got to love him or hate him. All right, so they lose to the Celtics, and then 2008, 2009, correct me, that's his first MVP season?
That's LeBron, somehow.
Yeah, LeBron, that's his first MVP
season. Yeah, LeBron, yeah.
Okay, and... they're trying. They make this whole campaign, Kobe versus LeBron in the finals. They get bumped. And then they get bumped again in 2010. and we go to the decision.
Okay, which, now on a side note, 2009, 2010, Lakers back-to-back champs, but go ahead.
Yeah. And you know what? Even if LeBron got to the finals in those years, Orlando went in 09 and Boston went in 2010, they probably would have got swept. They went that. I mean, the fact that those teams won 60 games, Mike Brown might be the worst coach in history of the NBA to win 60 games. That's all LeBron. That's all LeBron. They won 60 games. This man got carried. So he got tired.
So
look, if Cleveland, let me, you from Ohio. Okay. You follow LeBron's career. You read the papers out there and everything. Was Cleveland trying to get another free agent after the 2010 season? Or were they just saying, we're going to give LeBron whatever? LeBron will sign, resign with us because he can get the most money with us and we don't have to get anybody else. What was their state of mind at the time? Because they didn't pursue anybody. They put all their eggs in one basket, LeBron.
So
it's like they assumed that he was coming back.
So there's a lot of sidebar conversation with that. First and foremost, at this point, LeBron and Dan Gilbert, let's just say that they weren't the best of friends. They weren't even speaking at this point.
Gotcha.
There have been many stories written and many in-depth articles that I've read over the years about, at this point, Dan Gilbert and LeBron basically were at odds. Okay. Dan Gilbert was at a crossroads because he knew that the fans love LeBron. It was a situation where it was just assumed that LeBron would be back. It was just a formality. But what people didn't realize, Dan Gilbert and LeBron's relationship was so broken at that point that LeBron had made up his mind several months before that he wasn't coming back. That was going to be his last year. Got to it. The point where when they lost the game against the Celtics that basically eliminated the Cavs from the playoff, LeBron took off his jersey before he got to the locker room, basically in a symbolic gesture like, I'm done. And it took a long time. That's why when I know we'll talk about this at a later time, but it took a long time before Cleveland fans forgave LeBron for that moment, him taking basically, you know, sticking his middle finger, symbolic middle finger, taking his jersey off and walking off the court. And that's why when LeBron made the quote-unquote famous decision, that Cleveland fans were just like, you know, he was villain number one. He was public enemy number one.
So take us back to the night of the decision. Did you think Cleveland had a shot, or did you know that they had no shot, what you're telling me? Did you already know what you're telling me, that Gilbert and LeBron's relationship had suffered to the point where you knew he wasn't signing? It was a matter of where he was going, not if he was staying.
That's correct. Because LeBron was easily the most sought after free agent in the history of any sport at that point. I mean, you know, a guy like LeBron.
Wait a minute, still to this point, I've never seen a free agent in any sport being pursued. And Barry Bonds was pursued heavily in 93, and wound up with the Giants. But you had the Yankees,
a whole bunch of
teams, right? You had a whole bunch of teams chasing him. I'm trying to think of another free agent on that level where teams were pursuing.
The only time that I can remember in recent memory is when Tom Brady was a free agent. But the NFL is so different than any other sport because you got to have a cap room. You got to have the team in place. Right. Realistically, it's only three teams that realistically got a shot at a guy like Tom Brady.
And he went to the situation where he could win the fastest, and which he did. Right. All right. So when you heard the decision, when you heard he was going to Miami, what was your initial reaction?
Well, first and foremost, like I said, I had heard a lot of strong whispers and things, a lot of people talking off the record that knew a lot about the situation, that were saying that LeBron James wasn't going to do business with Dan Snyder anymore. He was done. So
Dan Gilbert. Wrong piece of shit. The wrong Dan.
Oh man, yeah. Not Daniel Snyder did that. That guy's definitely a piece of shit. Yeah. But with Dan Gilbert, because the relationship was so severed at that point. Hindsight being 2020, but you know, there's been plenty of stories and articles written since then saying that Dan Gilbert hated, you know, LeBron, the fact that LeBron traveled, you know, with his entourage, just 20 to 30 people deep on a nightly basis. All these on the road, how they had to get all these extra hotel rooms for him and his boys.
Meanwhile, the Cavaliers are making money hand over foot because of LeBron, right? 100%.
So
you have to pamper your franchise athlete because he's bringing in the money. If he's not bringing in the money, you would have traded him. So let's stop with the bullshit.
And not know that, Juan, but the other thing that you got to think about is the fact that this guy's a hometown kid. You could have had a story. You, at this point, LeBron is one of the few superstars. Allen Iverson, you know, I love Allen Iverson's game, but let's be honest. Nobody was going to come to Philly to play with Allen Iverson because of the style of ball that he played. I mean, you're a Sixers fan. You know that.
Look, so you could put any star that is as young as LeBron, play off LeBron, and they will flourish.
Right. So it's just a situation where if guys would have came to play with LeBron, no doubt about it, just like guys do now. You know, they want to play with LeBron, but Daniel Snyder was resonating.
There you go again. The wrong white supremacist, the wrong Nazi. Go ahead.
I mean, Dan Gilbert, man. Damn. You know, it was just one of those situations. He was resonated to just know that he was tired of all the off the court nonsense that he felt was nonsense that he had to deal with. So I knew he wasn't coming back to Cleveland. Him going to Miami was a little bit of a surprise because Eric Spoelstra was the coach, and you know, LeBron had his run-ins with quote unquote subpar coaches. So, you know, come to find out that Eric Spoelstra is a hell of a coach, a Hall of Fame coach at this point.
But you know what? He doesn't get that opportunity if they don't get LeBron, right?
That's right.
He would have gotten fired had he not gotten LeBron a year or two later, right?
Just like that overrated Doc Rivers would have got fired if he wouldn't have got Kevin Garnett. Doc Rivers is about to get his ass canned before they traded for Kevin Garnett. Let's just be honest about that. Kevin Garnett saved his career. And to be honest, this while we're on Doc Rivers, that guy has done less with more than any coach I've ever seen.
Look, I'm a Sixers fan. You're not going to get an argument out of me, right? I wanted the Sixers to hire Sam Cassell. I didn't want Doc Rivers, but I'll probably be getting my wish sooner than later. Sam is on the staff, and I think he'll be the next Sixers coach.
Right. So getting back to the LeBron decision, man. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you the fact that Daniel Snyder knew that LeBron wasn't coming, because sooner that decision was made, Gilbert puts out a thing on social media,
yeah,
a letter that obviously was written a long time before LeBron made the decision. And 5 minutes after the decision is made, Daniel Gilbert puts out this long, you know, basically spitefully worded essay, memo, whatever the hell you want to call it, saying how the Cavs would be better off for LeBron, and the Cavs would win a championship for LeBron. So he knew long before that decision that LeBron was coming back. But the thing that nobody talks about is Dan Snyder's, Daniel Gilbert is the reason why he didn't come back. So he's trying to turn LeBron into the villain when actually he's the villain. This is crazy.
And you know what? A lot of fans bought that, as you saw by the burning of the jerseys.
It's just insane, man. Just, you know, that was the most disheartening part in LeBron. But LeBron would never call it a quote unquote regret, but that was something that he wished he could take back and do a little different.
And in the next part, when we will come back in a couple of months, and we will go to his second half of his career, part two, the moment he joins Miami till today in LA, we'll talk, we'll go into further detail about what you just spoke about and the reconciliation between LeBron James, Gilbert, and the city of Cleveland when he indeed goes back to Cleveland and gets them their one and only championship. Now, like I do with all my co-hosts, I ask them a top five question. And this is a very difficult question. I can't wait to hear the answer to this top five question. Dre, you've been a lifelong Ohioan. You've seen them all. You follow Ohio State, the Reds, the Bengals, Cincinnati University. Name the, this is just your lifetime, not all time. Since you started watching sports, and you've been watching sports as long as I have, around 77, 78, in your 45 years of watching sports, who are the five greatest athletes to come out of the state of Ohio? I'm talking about born and raised in Ohio, not someone who lived in Kentucky till he was 15, then came and played a year or two in high school in Ohio or Cincinnati. Who are your five greatest athletes born and raised in the state of Ohio? Starting with number five.
Well, first and foremost, I got to give a couple shout outs for guys that didn't make the list. Guys like Jerry Lucas and John. Oh,
but I can't. Your lifetime, not.
Yeah.
Talk about when you started watching sports. So
okay.
Somebody like Jerry Lucas wouldn't have counted. What I do on this show is what we've seen, not what the history books have written.
So this was a very difficult list that, I thought about it long and hard, man. But here is my top five, not anything based on anything. This is just my top five. Number five is you got to go with the Golden Bear. The guy that even to this day, guys like Tiger Woods, no matter if he's broke up, is always going to play in his man's tournament. Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus, number five, one of the greatest, one of the three or four, or two or three, if you want to go that matter, or number one, depending on how you look at golfers of all time. Mm-hmm. Ohio State alum, Jack Nicklaus at number five.
That's a great pick because in 1986, he was the oldest man, right, to win the U.S. Open. So that's a great pick.
Right. Yep. Number four, and this one might be controversial, man, but I'm going to tell you, this person has done more for young people, young Black African-American women and the mental health, awareness than any pro athlete that I can think of in a long time. And she goes by the name of Simone Biles.
I'm surprised she's that low on your list because she's in my top five all-time female athletes of my lifetime. But, solid pick. I mean, anybody out there that disagrees with that pick, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
The first African-American woman gymnast world champion of all time. As long as, like Nas said, and that Nas podcast was absolutely spectacular, by the way, my brother.
Appreciate
I mean, anytime, like Nas says, no idea is original. Anytime you can claim that you're the first to do anything on a planet Earth, you're a bad motherfucker. And Simone Biles is definitely that.
And she has reinvented gymnastics with her style. Now look at all these young Black women that have incorporated hip hop music into their routines. And they're killing it. I mean,
yes.
I mean,
and looking good while they're doing it too, my friend.
I'm amazed.
So Simone Biles is number four. Now, as I stated, this is my list. You can agree with it or not. That's your prerogative. Number three, one of the most famous people on this planet. And whenever you have a nickname and you hear someone speak this nickname, you know what you're talking about. You know you're one of the greatest. The Hit King, Peter Edward Rose, number three on my list.
Look, Cincinnati legend, and he's right in the time frame because when you started watching baseball and you're a big Reds fan, he was right before his 44-game hitting streak, in which he was the biggest baseball player on the planet. He was on every cover of magazines. He might have been on a Wheaties box at that time, too. And Pete Rose, I don't care what happened with the gambling allegations. You got to give that man his due. He's one of the greatest pure hitters in the history of the sport. And it's a crime that he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Continue.
The same fate that Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are going to suffer, man. Yeah. Baseball writers have too much power. And they got to rectify that, man, because for guys that played in the Negro Leagues that just now getting to the Hall of Fame, have been there for years, posthumously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
It's a crime.
Yeah. Number two, another ball player that hits that round ball, the sweet swing. As I stated before, when you got a nickname, when you hear that nickname, you automatically know what you're talking about. You know you're one of the baddest.
Talking about
the
you.
Kid.
You, oh, the kid. Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah. Man, yes, you know, sir, what? I can't argue with this list so far. Real quick, some honorable mentions probably. Dave Parker.
Dave Parker. Hey, man, this was near and dear to your heart. You said this on several podcasts, and I respect you for it because you know your shit. The Hawk, Aaron Pryor.
Yeah, oh, I mean, that's another one you've
that man off the list.
Man, I don't know how you kept him off the list, but you know what? Listening to the people you got on the list, you got all these are first ballot legends. Never mind Hall of Fame legends that you got on your top five. So you know, and I, you know, even though I would love for Pryor to have been on the list, I can't argue with you. Barry Larkin. Another great guy that could have made you. I love Barry. You don't have that anymore. Hometown heroes playing for their team. No?
That's right.
And Cincinnati's one of the few teams that have continued that tradition. You, from Pete Rose to Barry Larkin. How many teams can say that? Griffey Jr. played for Cincinnati. Dave Parker played for Cincinnati.
Right.
What's the cat that used to be married to Halle Berry? What was his
name? Oh, Dave Justice.
He never played for Cincinnati, did he?
No, he never did.
No. He's another guy that you could have put on that list, but I can't argue.
Edwin Moses, born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, hurdle Olympic champions of all time.
Look how hard it is to make that list. The only other state that I can compare this to is Michigan, your interstate rival.
Yeah. And I know your boy would be number one or two, the Hitman. I know you love the Hitman.
When it comes to Detroit, Hitman would probably be on. Let me see. Joe Louis was born in Alabama. He was raised in Detroit. You might have to put Joe Louis above there because he was raised in Detroit. Sugar Ray Robinson was raised in Detroit. He would have to be number one. But that'll be a discussion when I have a Detroit dude on here, which I know many. Now, your number one, got to be King James, huh?
Hey, man, but process of elimination, you're a smart man. I mean, you're talking about global icon. You're talking about, you know, four-time NBA champion. You're talking about a guy, when his career is said and done, is going to be a top 10 in points, steals, assists, minutes played. I mean, records that'll never be broken. I mean, the man came into the league at 18 years old. He's going to retire probably when he's 40. Those records will never be broken.
And only the second non-point guard in the history of the NBA to lead the league in assists. It's Wilt Chamberlain and LeBron James.
Yeah. And not only that, before LeBron's career is over, he'll be the all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA.
And that's from a guy who's unselfish.
That's correct.
One of the most unselfish players in the history of the league. Because to be honest with you, if he was like AI or Kobe, he could have easily averaged 35 points a game for his entire career, not 27. Because he handled the ball all the time. He had the ball 100% of the time.
Right. And here's an interesting tidbit for you. This is why the list was so difficult, because he wasn't necessarily raised in Ohio, but he was born in Ohio. As a matter of fact, a little tidbit for the people out there, LeBron James and Steph Curry were born in the same hospital in Akron, Ohio.
Look at that. But of course, you know, Dell was probably going through town or whatever.
He was playing for the Cavs then, back then.
Yeah, so, you know, that was short-lived. All right. So I want to thank my man, Dre, from Cincinnati. He was phenomenal. He's Yo, This Is Dre on Twitter, if you want to reach out to him and tell him about this episode and what you thought of his list and of his retrospective on the career of LeBron James. It's just part one. There'll be a second part. We'll be coming back in a couple of months to a part two. We'll pick up when he goes to Miami up until modern day. And even today, Dre, he's got this ragabond Lakers team that's uneven, that doesn't. And yet, this season, he's having another incredible season carrying this team. I don't know how he hasn't broken his back from carrying all these teams. And still, you know, even though he donates more money than any other athlete not named Venus and Serena Williams, even though he has won 4 world championships with 3 different teams, even though he is an unselfish player who makes everyone around him better, even though there has never been any type of negative incident in his entire professional career, he's never been arrested. He's never been caught with a gun. He's never been caught with marijuana or whatever, right?
Never failed a drug test.
He doesn't drink, right? Right?
Yeah, he likes a nice little vino. Oh, and as a side note, LeBron's got him and Draymond Green and a couple other guys, they partnered and invested in this tequila. Let me tell you something, man. If you like tequila...
I don't drink, bro, so it won't matter to me.
No. I'm speaking to the people. Not you, Rob. I know you don't partake. Yeah, I know you don't partake. I'm just speaking to the people, letting the people know. If you want to have you a nice, smooth tequila, LeBron's tequila is outstanding. Now, it's LeBron's label, so it's very hard to find. Very hard to find. Gotcha. But if you can find it, you can get a hold of it, give it a try. You will not be disappointed. It's called Lobos, L-O-B-O-S 1707.
Now, to finish off what I was trying to say before we end the podcast, despite all those accolades, despite being an outstanding and upstanding father, husband, he's been with the same woman since his mid-teens, right?
Yes.
He is the single most criticized athlete by the racist middle-aged media, all right? I'm not going to get into a tantrum. I'm going to save that for part two. But I want the listeners out there to think, why is that? And I'm going to end the episode with that question. Why is LeBron James the single most criticized athlete on the planet, despite the fact that he is a role model for anybody, black, white, Hispanic, whatever? The man is who you want to strive to be as a professional. Dre, thank you for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be back next week talking about the career of the Undertaker.
And one more thing before we sign off here, brother. Yeah. I know that I've been listening to you and
for over a decade.
Long time, man. You've been happy laughing so hard, man. I'm trying to work out, man. I'm trying to, get my workout on. You got me laughing. I can't even finish my set, man. You a fool, boy. But tell my man Logan, I said, what up, man? I appreciate. He is the perfect straight man to you, my friend. You guys are a great team. I appreciate you so much, man.
Yo,
all the contact.
He's my Costello to my Abbott. He's my Costello.
That's right.
My Abbott, right? That's
right. Yeah, you keep on doing what you're doing, man. I appreciate you, man. Sometimes I get busy and I'm a couple days behind.
You always catch up, baby. Always catch up.
Yeah. Yes,
all right, ladies and gentlemen, we will talk next week.